Good morning, everyone. Thanks for being here. So yesterday, a few of us were here for Zazen Kai, and we started this conversation about time, and I've been thinking a lot about this over the past few days. I find it a fascinating topic and quite mysterious and hard to conceptualize and really get a handle on. So I'm hoping for your help this morning with this. So we have this perception of time as a linear thing. It's moving in one direction very, very logically from past to present and future. And we have this feeling that we're somehow separate from this flow. We're an outside observer of time. It's something that's happening to us. So this analogy of a river came up yesterday, and I thought it was a really helpful one. So if time is a river, we have this tendency to divide this river up into events. This part of the river is different from that part of the river, and we don't somehow acknowledge it as one whole thing, which really doesn't make sense when you're viewing it as a river. And on top of cutting up this river into different parts, we separate ourselves from it. So we imagine, okay, I'm standing on the shore watching this river go by, or maybe I'm riding that river, but I'm kind of riding a raft drifting along on top of it. But very rarely do we actually experience ourselves as one with that river, as completely undivided from the river ourselves. So Dogen has this term that he says being time, uji, being time, and this is a hyphenated term, being time as one thing. And I'm going to read a little bit of this. Being time is a term that Dogen uses to describe the non-duality between things and their temporality. Time itself is being, and all being is time. Objects themselves are not in time because time is not an objective container. Rather, time manifests as the temporal processes we identify as objects. I'll read this again. Time expresses itself as processes, as the temporal processes we identify as objects. The time we call spring blossoms directly as an existence called flowers. The flowers, in turn, express the time called spring. This is not existence within time. Existence itself is time. If, however, everything is temporal, if, in other words, the world is composed not of things but of processes, there is an extraordinary paradox. If there is only time, there is no time. Like everything else, I am not in time because I am time. What I do and what happens to me are not events that occur in time. They are the forms that my being time takes. When my activities are no longer situated within a clock time, understood as a container external to me. You gotta love some Dogen, right?
When's he alive?
It's like in the
1300s or something.
Mm-hmm. It's incredible.
I mean, if he would have been alive now with physics and mm-hmm. math and all this stuff, I mean, who knows what he would have done? I mean,
it's really amazing, right?
Yeah.
That's
all he could do. Was just, wow.
I'll finish this paragraph and let's see. And to be time is to be free from time. So to be completely one with time is to be free from it. I cannot be trapped. If I am time, I cannot be trapped by time. Without time as an objective container, I live in what is sometimes called the eternal present. We'll get a little bit more into this later. The eternal present. This is another aspect of, or another way to understand birth as no birth and death as no death. I live in, or as, the eternal now, whenever I non-dually become what I am doing, whether it is birthing, dying, or anything else. And Dogen talks about this in the context of birth and death as parts of the river, not separate from each other. Completely the same thing. Birth and death is the same thing. So rather than try to interpret Dogen, I thought I'd talk a little bit about kind of the result of feeling like we're separate from time. So since we feel like we're somehow outside of time or on the shore of this river, there's this constant struggle. There's this feeling like I need to do something with time. We hear this in our language all the time. We say, I shouldn't be wasting this time. I need to use my time wisely.
Time is passing me by.
Time is passing me by, like the river, right? And I'm just standing here missing it somehow.
Time is money.
Time is money. We have how many expressions do we have like this?
For no
separating us ourselves from time.
Mm-hmm. Right. So we do this all the time, which creates this. I think it's dukkha and very sometimes very subtle forms, dukkha, suffering, in very subtle forms or very painful forms. So we're trying to manipulate it or control it in some way, which causes in on some level this underlying anxiety or remorse, maybe, if we feel like we've missed something. So there's always this little degree of suffering. And I was considering how this arises in meditation. So in its most obvious form, we can be sitting in meditation completely lost in reverie, or completely lost in imagining about the future, just completely stuck in what we think is past or future, but really is happening right now, but we're totally lost in it. Or, and I experience this or see this in my sitting quite frequently, this very subtle leaning towards something that's not actually happening. And I think this can be very common for people that are maybe experienced in meditation, is this trying to create circumstances for a more awakened future moment. So creating a posture or a stability of mind or move, always moving towards something away from what is actually happening right now, which has nothing to do with my action, right? Completely independent of anything that I can do to it or with it. And there's dukkha here. There's suffering and this moving away from what actually is, regardless of what it is. So Dogen uses the words taking the backward step to describe zazen. So rather than moving forward to take this backward step, but I would take this even further and say this is not at all taking any steps at all. If I had to try to explain it, it would be more of a sinking in and just complete letting go, a very deep letting go for any desire to manipulate our experience in any way. So now and then I try to, if I think of it, I try to meditate as if I've never heard of Zen, as if I know nothing about this practice, nothing about Buddhism. Also meditate as if nothing from my previous existence up till now is real. Right? So meditate without any trappings, any ideas about what I am, what this moment is, what this practice is, in a very completely just naked and bare, open way, which is quite liberating and fascinating. So, you guys ready for a little more Dogen? This is the famous firewood and ash, firewood and ash analogy that he uses. And I think we can experience this, a little bit of this, and through really sinking into each moment of our meditation practice. He says, firewood becomes ash, and it does not become firewood again. Yet do not suppose that the ash is future and the firewood is past. You should understand that firewood abides in the phenomenal expression of firewood, which fully includes past and future and is independent of before and after. Ash abides in its condition as ash, which fully includes before and after. Just as firewood does not become firewood again after it is ash, you do not return to birth after death. I want to read just one sentence from this again, because I think it, for me, it helps to clarify. You should understand that firewood abides in the phenomenal expression of firewood, which fully includes past and future and is independent of before and after. So how is it that one moment fully includes past and future, yet is independent of what happened, past and future?
The dude abides.
The dude abides.
The dude abides.
Perfect. The dude abides. So acknowledging that that moment is complete in and of itself, and it already contains everything, it becomes its own expression, not dependent, maybe that's not the best word, but not attached to what came before and what may or may not come after. Each moment is complete. So, now and then, when we really, really sink into this present moment as it is, there's this also this feeling like each moment is very transient, right? Passing us by, like the river, transient, gone in a flash. We say this all the time. We feel like, oh no, if I don't really pay attention, I'm going to totally miss it and not get it back. But when we really, really fully enter this moment, it's not at all limited. It includes everything. It's huge. And it's not at all small and fleeting. It's all there is. This is it, right? This moment is everything. And who better to talk about time than Eckhart Tolle? So I'll read. We remember this book. What year did this come out?
That book took me forever to read. Every line.
99.
It's still sitting on my bookshelf right here.
Every line is a lifetime.
Yeah, it's every line is a gem. And I had no trouble just flipping through and finding the perfect thing. So here he's talking about ending the delusion of time. He says, here is the key, end the delusion of time. Time and mind are inseparable. Remove time from the mind and it stops, unless you choose to use it. To be identified with your mind is to be trapped in time, the compulsion to live almost exclusively through memory and anticipation. This creates an endless preoccupation with past and future and an unwillingness to honor and acknowledge the present moment and allow it to be. The compulsion arises because the past gives you an identity and the future holds the promise of salvation. I like this. The past gives us an identity. So what do we have without that? Sometimes we feel it can be scary. You're standing on the edge of a cliff almost if you acknowledge this. And the future holds the promise of salvation, of fulfillment in whatever form. Both are illusions. time isn't precious at all because it is an illusion. What you perceive as precious is not time, but the one point that is out of time, the now. He says the now is outside of time. That is precious indeed. The more you are focused on time, past and future, the more you miss the now, the most precious thing there is. Why is it the most precious thing? Firstly, because it is the only thing. It's all there is. The eternal present is the space within which your whole life unfolds, the one factor that remains constant. Life is now. There was never a time when your life was not now, nor will there ever be. Secondly, the now is the only point that can take you beyond the limited confines of the mind. It is your only point of access into the timeless and formless realm of being. Wow. Your only point of access into the timeless and formless realm of being. He's talking about what we call emptiness. So that's probably enough to chew on for a morning. Any thoughts or comments about any of this? Jennifer.
Yeah, thank you. When you were talking, Lori, about and also related to the Eckhart Tolle passage about time as being like without the, that it contains past and future but is not of past and future. So I mean for me, I'm quite visual, and so I had this vision of like a dewdrop. You know, that it's just, it contains all and is exactly what it is. But anyway, but the term that also came to me was interbeing.
Mm-hmm.
This notion of that there is a connectedness, and that we are somehow, that we understand a continuum, and yet the only thing that matters is this moment of interbeing.
Mm-hmm.
This is it, right? So that was just a word that came to me. The other thing that came to me was the notion of relativity and time. We have these really different, like we have the notion of the time, like a lifetime, right? A lifetime for a human, which is 70 or 80 years, all things going well. And then you have the notion of like, I don't know, like, you know, the time that it takes to flip on a switch and the electricity powers the light to come on. Like that has a very different sense of, so this relativity
mm-hmm.
of time and how that also can influence the sense of separateness, right? So these influences or these experiences that I have as I'm going through life, which is time manifesting, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we go with what Dogen says, and how that reinforces a sense of separateness.
Mm-hmm.
And the concept of interbeing helps me to move past that in some way.
Mm-hmm. There's that great metaphor that Thich Nhat Hanh uses about the cloud. What is it? Can you
see the cloud in your tea?
Mm-hmm.
Or those things.
This is completely transcending any notions of time or separation.
Yeah. Or drink your cloud.
Enjoy
your cloud. Yeah, it's all those different. Yeah. The cloud is in the tea and the rain's in the
Could you explain dukkha again for me? I know that
mm-hmm.
when I heard about it, I thought, like, yes, but now I kind of forgot what it actually is.
Dukkha is most often translated as suffering,
mm-hmm.
the first noble truth that the Buddha taught, but it encompasses a lot more than that, from like little minor irritations to really intense physical or emotional suffering and everything in between. So I this feeling of being outside of time creates in many different ways suffering.
Well, I was just wondering, in not time, impatience or anxiety couldn't exist, but then I physically experience it And then it's like, how come? Like, what happened to this physicality that is actually developed in patients? Kind of something happened,
mm-hmm.
and now it's at times quite, I mean, it's tangible, and it's a felt experience.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably the conditioning. Something must have influenced this body to think it's impatient.
Mm-hmm.
So much that it actually feels like I can't stand it, you know.
Mm. When did I learn that? When was that taught?
Right.
We were talking about little kids yesterday. And how they have no experience of this feeling of anxiety or regret, because they have no, they're just always right there. They haven't learned that separation from, they can't conceive of time, really.
Or dogs.
Right? Yeah.
You could walk out of the room and come back in and they're like, oh, I thought you'd never come back, right? And then you could be gone for a week when you walk in and they go, oh, I thought you'd never come back.
Right? Yeah, but like my dog used to wait for me to come home every day and it'd be by the window waiting, it knew what time I'd be coming. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's different. We live in these two worlds. You know, we have the non-dualistic we have to live in every day on some level, and then and non-dualistic that we talk about here, it kind of makes me wonder, like, who ever first thought about this whole idea of the non-dualistic thing about not everything that the whole Zen world? I guess the Buddha, you know. but we can only get away from suffering, is my thought, from the dukkha, when we're in this space and we're kind of. I believe I'm forced to go back into the world of suffering when I have to go into the everyday life of that, where time does matter.
Mm-hmm. And Eckhart Tolle talks a lot about that too, about clock time, about the relative nature of time and the
clock
ultimate.
Relative
and ultimate. So it's interesting, this language we use about going into and coming out of or getting lost or getting separated from it, because in reality it's always the same, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we have this perception like somehow we're moving in and out. It's interesting.
And that's impossible.
It's impossible.
Yeah,
where could we possibly go?
We're not really moving in and out of anything, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. That was actually the part that I was reading from the Realizing Genjo Koan book
mm-hmm.
yesterday. It was talking about that we're not going in and out of anything.
Mm-hmm.
There's not, the relative and the absolute are not like, that's what Dogen was talking about. We label them two different things, which just makes it all worse. Because that's why he said, form is emptiness, emptiness is form. But then he added, form is just form and emptiness is just emptiness. Because if you set them apart from each other as two different things, then we're kind of perpetuating the whole thing. But the time thing is really fast. This is really fascinating because there's so much that we do that does, you know, I never thought about this. It really does cause suffering. Life is passing me by. I don't have enough time.
Mm-hmm.
All we have is, you know, we set all this stuff of our life in opposite to time in some way. And yeah, and that separation from it, then we never have enough.
Yeah. And practice is the saying about practice now, you know, your time is short.
Mm-hmm.
Practice if your hair is on fire. That, those sayings in Zen, even that, you know, realizing our time is limited for reaching realization. Yeah.
You know, what I find fascinating that through the evolutionary lens, we have become like linguistic beings. That's
mm-hmm.
how it seems. And we have a desire to articulate mundane and big stuff. So there's always this desire to articulate how this could work. And sometimes, you know, the notion of this is all illusion or Maya, it's a little bit disconnected.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes a little bit like, why bother? If this is all fake, why bother? But I kind of like the notion. It's also sometimes it's explained as it's a game.
Mm-hmm.
This is, life is play. And, you know, remembering and watching children in play, time becomes kind of, goes on the back burner.
Mm-hmm.
The immersion in play, or maybe our art. Like if you really become one with your action, music. I guess I'm not very artistic.
Sport.
I know more about sport than actually instruments or painting, but this, if you become one with what you're expressing, time kind of disappears.
Mm-hmm.
It's which is kind of more engaged for me than this is all like not real.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, and I like what you're saying about our desire to express things through words.
Yeah, evolution has
yeah.
made it possible, and for some reasons, but then now we want to use.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the apparatus and the capacity
mm-hmm.
and different languages and amazing.
We never talked about form and emptiness being the same. How would we know? How would we know they're the same?
Yeah,
I think that's why
like Dogen tried to complete the circle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you start with there's form and there's, you know, but if they really are the same, then form is just form, and it can, you know, it's just, an emptiness is just emptiness. You have to complete the, yeah, I mean, just thinking, gosh, well, if he would have been born in the West, you know, 300 years later, he probably would have been burned at the stake or something, but, yeah, that's a really good time, and how separating ourselves from time is just inherently causes suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the ultimate separation, and it's so subtle. I never really thought about how subtle that is. We're always, you know, speaking for myself, just because there's never enough time for all the stuff. Yeah, there's enough time for time. You know, in Spanish, there's a great saying. You reminded me of this. Dale tiempo al tiempo, right? Give time some time. When things are, you know, hectic, give time time.
That's neat.
Yeah.
And that's why time also is very flexible. For example, when we realize sometimes, for example, 30 minutes, it can go
mm-hmm.
fast, but it can go like eternity sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's due to the separation we have with, if we are not one with time at that time, we can think it's far away in the future.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And this separation, it's a moment where our minds are actually processing reality. It's already after. It's, we're always, any processing we do is always one tiny step behind, right? So I think to acknowledge that, can we ever actually...
It's like when we speak of now, when we think already of now, it's occurring in the past.
Right.
It's just a fraction of a second. So.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, you know. But just one last thing, you know, it came to mind that you know, they say that any true teaching of the Buddha has the three Dharma seals, right? Non-self, right? To be one with time, you have to let, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's non-self there. There's, because we're not separate from time. There's suffering,
mm-hmm.
and nirvana, right? The absence of suffering.
Mm-hmm.
And those three things are all in that.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. That's wonderful.
Four vows?
Four vows.
It's time.
Sentient beings are numberless. I vow to free them. Illusions are inexhaustible. I vow to transform them. Practice paths are boundless. I vow to study them. The enlightened way is incomparable. I vow to embody it. Sentient beings are numberless. I vow to free them. Practice paths are boundless. I vow to study them.
The
enlightened way is incomparable.
I vow to embody it.
Sentient beings are numberless. I vow to free them. Illusions are inexhaustible. I vow to transform them. Practice paths are boundless. I vow to study them. The enlightened way is incomparable. I vow.